Welcome to a brand new episode of Backpass with Ras, and this is your host Ras. And as you can see in my background today, we're going to speak about Newcastle and Kevin Keegan's entertainers, to be specific. And for the first time on the show, you know, we're getting guests from three different countries. Normally you get two. This time I've got guests from three different countries. I've got four guests. One is still not here yet. So just to let you know, we've got Newcastle fans from Singapore, Newcastle fan, another Newcastle fan from Indonesia, and the last one who's not joined us yet will be Newcastle fan from Malaysia. So let me just introduce to you the guys from Singapore. Ashwin, let me just bring them on and then I'll, you know, give you a proper introduction. So here you go. The Newcastle fans from Singapore, we've got Terence Ong and Ashwin Tiwari. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hi, thanks for inviting us, Ras.
Yes, thanks a lot for having us.
My pleasure.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, my pleasure as well to have you guys on the show. So maybe you guys want to share a bit about your club, your supporters club, that is.
Yep. Okay, so we are Newcastle United Supporters Club Singapore, or otherwise known as NUFCSG. We've been around since. You can say that, yeah. We try not to have a competition, but yeah, we've been around since 2001. We've been, you know, uniting the local fans and, you know, anybody who supports Newcastle United in Singapore, whether be it locals or expats, we have match day gatherings at right now at Partners in Crime, PIC down at River Valley Road. We participate in your futsal league as well. We've got a number of 11-a-side teams. We've got a social team. We've got a weekday league team, a main league team. We've also got, you know, a veterans team that comes and plays socially as and when, and they are, okay. You know, so yeah, we just try. Our main focal point is to unite Newcastle United fans in Singapore, give them a brilliant match day experience when we screen the games, and play for the shirt, for the badge on our heart, you know what I mean? So the club that we all love and we've all followed since, you know, when we were young. So yeah, that's essentially who we are.
Okay, Terence, how many Newcastle fans are there in Singapore? Because it's actually quite a sizable amount of fans supporting Newcastle. Terence, you're muted.
You're muted, bro.
Sorry about that. Take two for this one. No, I mean, I was just saying that it's funny you mentioned this, Russ, because even before Newcastle went on this whirlwind of a season, right, and the takeover that came shortly before that, we've had a sizable group here in Singapore. I think the last count that we did was, and Ashwin, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe 1,800 thereabouts, 1,800 members.
About 1,009 right now.
1,009, yeah. So we've got about 1,900 members in our community right now. And it's really good, and it's heartening that all of us now are celebrating the good times that the team has brought us. So I'm looking forward to having more fans come forward and support Newcastle and hopefully, you know, join up with NUFCSG as well.
Okay. All right. Thanks. We'll speak more about the good times today later on in the show. But let me just bring on our first ever guest from Indonesia, I must say. Let him come on. It's by the way, Terence, thanks for honoring the show as well with the choice of kid. Love it.
It's a Backpass show, right? Definitely.
You got to honor it, man.
Yeah, we were actually debating. We were debating about this earlier. Who's going to wear the older jersey and who's going to wear the newer one? And I'm like, okay, Terence, you wear. It's okay, you wear.
It's a bit tight, right. It's a bit tight now, but okay, we'll make it work.
Yeah. It's okay, man. All right, our first ever guest from Indonesia, Abram. How are you doing? Apa kabar?
I'm really great. Terima kasih, teman-teman semua. Thank you, my friends. I'm really great.
Sama-sama.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to meet you all. I'm still having fun now, seeing you all, seeing my brother from across the Southeast Asia.
Yeah, man.
Something that we rarely do recent days. or recent years maybe.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, with COVID and stuff, it's not been easy. You know, we actually the last regional meet we had was what? 2018, I think. But yeah, I think 2015. Yeah, 2018 was our. Yeah, somewhere around there we had our last regional meet. You know, with the Indonesian Toonami and the Malaysian Toonami, and we actually played an 11-a-side friendly sort of thing between the three of us. Yeah. So it was a really good experience, and you know, I'm glad that you know. Well, the pandemic is more or less in control right now, new normal and whatnot. And we are actually in talks to arrange for another such a regional gathering again. And let's just kick it, make it happen, man.
Mm-hmm. All right. Abram, which part of Indonesia are you from?
I'm from, originally I'm from Medan, but now I live in Jakarta.
Okay. So right now you're from Jakarta. So I believe because in Indonesia you probably have fans in every state. It's such a big country, right? So you're probably in the Jakarta branch of Newcastle fans.
Yes, that's right. Indonesian Tournament has so many branches and fans from so many cities. Like in my city in Medan, we have about not so many people. Maybe about 15 to 20 people. But not so active, not like Jogja or Jakarta. But if you know Papua, the very east island in Indonesia, we have Newcastle fans there too.
Okay, all right, cool. And just roughly, how many fans are there in Jakarta supporting Newcastle?
In Jakarta, how many? If you're asking how many fans who I know, I believe in Facebook too. It's about maybe around 100, but not 100 active people. Maybe active people around 50.
Mm. Okay. All right. So, gentlemen, let's get the show on the road. And we'll, as usual, we'll start with the old school football, going back to the 90s. So, Newcastle United in the 90s. Well, my memories, first of all, will be of this team. You know, never heard of them. Suddenly, I see them. And they're scoring lots of goals. Andy Cole and Peter Beardsley up front. Whoa. And I checked the records as well. That first season in the Premier League, 93-94, they finished third, which is commendable. They qualified for the UEFA Cup as well. Abram, the question to you is, we're speaking about Kevin Keegan and his era at Newcastle United. His first era, because I believe he had a second spell at the club. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, so his first spell at the club, so the rise from for Newcastle to the Premier League, can you just share a bit of the rise and the early years of Newcastle in the Premier League?
So before he first took charge of Newcastle, he was a player of Newcastle. They called him Messiah. Then when in years later, when Newcastle in the urge of getting relegated to the third division at that time, Keegan came and saved Newcastle, and not took long time, he took Newcastle to the Premier League. After the first division, then the Premier League, right? So when he took Newcastle to Premier League, as you said, Newcastle could be brought into the top three, became a very strong team with many local players like Lee Clark, like Steve Watson, like Paul Kitson, maybe he's local, I think he's local, and Peter Beardsley, and he brought Robert Lee, he had Andy Cole at that time. Yeah. He had so many players that really entertaining. He had so many players who were really entertaining, and then after that, maybe the very first entertainer season was 95-96 when he brought Les Ferdinand, David Ginola, Faustino Spria, and so many players. Maybe they were fringe players at that time, but when he brought to Newcastle, they were like Eddie Howe now. Eddie Howe brings many like mid player, but he made them into stars, just like Kevin Keegan did in around 93 to 97, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And any memories you have of that early years, let's say from 93 the first two seasons in the Premier League, 93, 94, and 94, 95. Any memories you have of Newcastle in those years?
Actually, I started supporting Newcastle in 1996 when Alan Shearer came from Blackburn Rovers after the Euros.
Okay.
But years later, in 2010s and above, then I watched Newcastle games in 92. Mm. It was very like open play. They didn't look like a team who just being brought up to the Premier League. They looked like a very ready team for the Premier League with young players. With not so many superstars, maybe only Peter Beasley, the superstar back
in because he's right? already experienced player at that time.
He's experienced player. He was champions. I think he was the champion for Liverpool. Maybe I didn't remember.
In the '80s,
and they had Andy Cole as well.
Yeah.
So Andy Cole and Peter Beasley and Rob Lee also, and so many players in the midfield and the defender. So. That was the first. That was the thing that I could remember. But when I watched the videos, not about in 1992-95, I didn't watch Newcastle. To be honest, I started watching Newcastle in
96. Were you supporting any team before Newcastle?
No team. No. Yeah, because that was my junior high school year. So I didn't have any team to support. I just love to watch football, local football and international football. I didn't support any team, but I follow Blackburn Rovers because my parent gave me Blackburn shirt when Blackburn was crowned champions. I follow Blackburn, then I follow Shearer. Then that's the first of the story. I supported Newcastle.
Okay, in junior high school, how old were you? How old was that? How old were you in the junior high school? What's that standard like? I mean, what the age? What's the age like that?
95, which means I was 11, 10 to 11.
Ah, okay.
Football was not like today. Kids, 7-year-old kid now has teams to support. They know what is PSG. They know what is AC Milan. Not like us. Not like us in 90s. We didn't know what team because it's not. No, there's no social media.
Things are very different back then.
different.
Yeah, true. All right, Terence and Ashwin, the title challenge of 95-96. Talk to me about it, man.
Oof.
Where?
I
got the stats for you. You were leading from August till mid March. At one point, 12 points ahead of Manchester United.
Terence, I'm going to let you take this one. This is one of the biggest heartbreaks.
I was going to say, it's, you know what? I think it says a lot that the 12-point lead that we blew is still the record, lead that any team has lost, in the title race in the Premiership so far. You know what? I'm still a bit of a loss for words as to how Newcastle won champions at the time. A lot of people chalk it down to a lack of experience, challenging at the top, going up against a wily old fox in the form of Sir Alex Ferguson, and maybe even the return of Cantona as well, who came back from a ban. Was it a 7 or 8 month ban or something like that for
it was around there, 9 month ban actually. 9 month for ban. Kicking the ban, yeah.
Correct. So I mean, one, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, this is something that's not really heard of a lot. At the time I was still a bit of a neutral. I watched a little bit of Premier League football here and there. But I didn't remember much. So after I started supporting Newcastle the season after, which was at the same time that Abrams, got into Newcastle as well, my dad used to tell me this theory that he believed that Newcastle blew it because Keegan introduced Faustino Esprilla into the team at the time.
Yes.
He felt that it upset the team dynamics and chemistry at that time, because I think up front at the time we had Les Ferdinand, we had Peter Beardsley, potentially Paul Kitson as well, from what I remember. And, you know, to then introduce a maverick like Faustino Esprilla, who my dad felt wasn't a team player or maybe as hardworking as the others, upset, caused the team to have a dip in form, lah. But you know what? All these theories aside, it was fun to think of what could have been. But you know what? Thankfully the good years went on for a little while more, lah, after that.
Yeah. Let's just talk about the good times then of those days. You guys, okay, Terrence already has mentioned you were a fan a season after that. Ashwin, you same for you as well, I believe.
Yeah, it was around the same time. Basically, I heard about Newcastle in 96. That was the Liverpool-Newcastle game where we lost 4-3. Stan Collymore scored the last minute winner. And I think that was when, Cablevision...
Kevin Keegan slinking down his seat. That's another image.
That was, I don't blame him. I mean, 92nd minute, Stan Collymore just, we were 3-3 right at the neck, and then Stan Collymore comes in, pop, game over, literally, right? I mean, so that was when Cablevision came to Singapore, more or less, right? So that was the first, one of my uncles, a Liverpool fan, went over to his place to catch the game. Unfortunately, my younger brother is also a Liverpool fan. And it all just started out from there. Yeah, I'm not a very good older brother. I didn't manage to convince him enough to be a Newcastle fan. But jokes aside, so that was when, I started, because, the fans were still singing. The fans were still going all out, trying to cheer on the team, trying to rile up, like, get everybody motivated. And I'm wondering to myself, who are these guys? Who are these guys that, the game is gone in some sense, yet they're still just singing out, they're cheering out loud. And I think, essentially that was when I just started supporting Newcastle. I just started following and I just fell in love with Newcastle from then on. Mm-hmm. I started following from 96, 97 season when Shearer came in. It was just a brilliant time. It was really a brilliant time to see that, we've managed to bag Shearer in, a jolly homeboy. He just won the league with Blackburn, and many wanted him, and he came to us.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of that it just shows you how strong the Geordie unity is, how strong the loyalty in the entire city is for Newcastle United. I just fell in love with the club from then on.
Okay. Terrence, yourself, your father, who was he supporting? Is he also a Newcastle fan?
Nah, my dad was just a football fan in general.
Okay.
I think as years go by, he takes a liking to different teams. I think at one point in time he liked Manchester City when Manchester City was not the Manchester City we knew now because of some players that he fancied over there. But now my dad's always been a football fan in general. I came to support Newcastle because the first full-length Premier League match that I actually remember watching was Newcastle whacking Tottenham Hotspur 7-1. I think that was January 97, and I was 97, I was about maybe 11 years old, and I thought to myself, wow, this team is not bad, it could hantam someone, it could hantam another team 7-1. I thought, wow, this must be a good team to support. So, never looked back since. So that was how I got to Newcastle. I think my dad still shakes his head every now and then as to why I stuck with this club through so many things and so many years. But I guess never complain and not complaining now either.
Yeah. I think amongst the three of you, probably I have the best memory of that season because I started supporting or watching football from the early 90s, so 91 onwards. But I'm not that old. I'm 39 this year, but I just started early. So yes, you mentioned about Faustino Asprilla. I think at that point of time, for Newcastle to sign Faustino Asprilla is a big deal.
Yes,
because he came from Parma in Serie A and he was doing well then. And in those days, not many players would transfer from Serie A to the English Premier League because that was the best league in the world
at that time. Then,
normally you get the players that are at the tail end of the career, then they would come to the Premier League. But he was still in his prime. And yeah, you're right, because a lot of people did attribute Newcastle's slip up to that, to the decision to sign Asprilla. And, upsetting the
the balance of the team. And, like, yeah.
Yeah, the balance of the team. And it became a bit too top heavy. Yeah, mm. I would say that, you know, it became too top heavy because that's the way also Kevin Keegan likes to play his football. And that resulted in their fall. But I mean, you mentioned that's still the biggest lead a team has dropped to lose the Premier League till today. But at least you've not been top for the longest before losing the Premier League, right? That honor goes to some other club recently. So some consolation there in recent times for Newcastle fans.
I mean, as a Newcastle fan, we've had a lot of ups and downs over the years. That much is for certain. And I think, you know, it shows that, for example, this 12-point lead that we, I won't say we threw out the window. It was just things happen. We just lost the lead, right? It's a very different time period than today when Arsenal really dropped out, like literally, right? And that being said, I mean, Terence was saying that his dad shook his head, you know, when Terence started supporting Newcastle United. I think I speak for every Newcastle United fan when I say that I think we are immune to heart attacks. Over the years, the number of instances we've been put in, it's been crazy. It's been crazy, especially the last 10 years. The last 10 years has been crazy. And I'm, of course, we're going to talk about the Sooners era and after Sabor, Sooners era. Joe Kinnear era. You know, so these were instances where, you know, as a Newcastle fan, your heart constantly skipped a beat. You never knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think coming back to the entertainers era when we actually dropped that 12-point lead, it just shows you that, you know, Newcastle as a club, you know, it's not that how we've not really been, I mean, we've always tried to deliver certain things, and that 12-point lead shows a lot. It's just that when we lost it, it was a bitter disappointment, not just to Keegan himself, but everybody in the city and the club, and associated with the club rather.
Okay, Abraham, do you remember when Kevin Keegan resigned? Actually, he wasn't sacked, he was resigned. He resigned on the 7th of January, 97. Do you remember that moment? Like, they come as a shock to you on what happened there?
So, the source of our news at the time was newspaper, right? So, when I read the newspaper, Keegan resigned. So, in Indonesia or in Malay, Keegan keluar dari Newcastle. So what is this real? So I was shocked at the time then, right? And there was no correct reasons back there. So there's so many speculations why he resigned or why he got sacked, but media said he was resigned. So something like that. I was shocked. I was a bit in disbelief, right, at the time. So we asked why, but I don't have anyone to ask why, because I don't have Indonesian Newcastle United supporter friend at that time, because I didn't know anyone at that time. So yeah, it was shocking.
I think it's also a very interesting point to ask, something interesting to ask you. Amongst your friends, what was the most common football clubs that your friends supported?
At that time, when I started watching Newcastle, it was Manchester United and Juventus.
Yeah, so because I know in Indonesia, Serie A is very strong.
Very strong.
Big following for Serie A football. Yeah, so Juventus is the club, right? Okay, and Juventus also wears the same color as Newcastle.
Not County, of course, actually.
Not County, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so that season, 96-97, of course, you started off on fire. You smashed Manchester United 5-0. Remember that?
Yes.
You want Philip Albert goal, man.
Philip Albert.
Yeah, you guys, share your memories. Come on, share your memories. Your closest rival coming back to St. James's Park. They had smashed you in the Charity Shield first, 4-0, and then they come to St. James's Park and you do that to them. Wow.
I was just gonna say, Rust. I mean, that season didn't start out well for us because In the Charity Shield, you would expect a closer fight between the top two teams in the league, right? From last season, from the season before. But my gosh, we got our asses, we got our butts whooped 4-0, you know, excuse my language. So, you know, when we hosted Man United at St. James's Park, no one would have expected us to win 5-0. I think expect us to put in a good fight, maybe win by 1-0, by a goal or two, yes, but my gosh, no one expected us to win by 5-0 and to top off that win convincingly with, you know, that peach of a goal from Philip Albert. It was the stuff of dreams, really. It was the stuff of dreams.
Did you watch that match live on TV?
I probably not. I don't have a lot of memories from that game, but maybe because I don't remember a lot of things of my childhood already. So no, I don't remember watching the game for me. The others might have. The others here might have.
Any memories, guys? Abraham or Ashwin, anyone of you caught that match?
I didn't manage to catch that match. I caught so last time how we used to get our football news was newspaper, right? So I remember buying...
That's in Singapore,
In Singapore, right? So I remember buying the new paper and I saw the result and I was just like, you know, this is bad. How is it possible that they could come to St. James's? And it's always been that case, right? So I myself was in awe. Like how I'm stuttering right now, exactly the same way. So essentially, I mean, we were all in awe. New paper, I saw the results. I was like, this is brilliant, man. 5-0. I could go and just go to any of my friends who support the menu and say, hey, nah, see. You know, at that age, that's what you want to do, right? And that was essentially what I remember from that game. I remember from that game. Mm-hmm. And many years later, when YouTube came about and the internet was you know, we had more access to it, I tried to find the highlights and I managed to find the Philip Albert goal. And and I still sometimes, when Newcastle was going to a bad spout of things, I would actually find the highlights of that game and watch it. I don't know why, but that was the game that I would watch. And
it was an antiseptic to your wounds.
Essentially so.
And you guys, Terence and Ashwin, when you got news that Kevin Keegan had resigned, did it came as a shock or a surprise to you guys?
Okay. I think for me, it was like, I was like, okay, what's going to happen now? What's going to happen now? After Keegan, it was Dalglish, right? But at that point, Dalglish had done wonders. I think before that, he coached the Blackburn team, right? And when he was hired, I was like, okay, you know, not too bad. But the statistics for his reign speaks for them for itself, lah. So I will not go too much into that. But to me, when Keegan resigned, I felt that, you know, I was lost. I didn't know what was going to happen to us. I didn't know who we were going to hire. Up until we hired Dalglish, I said, okay, maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel. But when he resigned, I was a bit lost. Terence, you?
Mm.
Yeah, same for me as well. No one expected him to go. Not especially when the team wasn't exactly floundering. You know, it's not as if we were mid-table after challenging for honors for the last few seasons. I think we were still at the top. We're still at the top two or top three, if I don't remember wrongly. But so it was a bit of a surprise. But you know, on hindsight now, I realize that, you know, Kevin Keegan is like that. He's a man who wears his emotions and heart on his sleeve, and you know, he gives every job his all, and when he's done, he's done. I mean, look at, I know I'm digressing a little bit, but look at how he left the England job after after the Euros. And I think it was off the back of
losing to Germany, lost to Germany.
So it was at Wembley. And coincidentally, that goal was scored by Dietmar Hamann, who was a Newcastle player formerly at that time, right? A former Newcastle player. And I think Keegan, he resigned in the toilet. He was slouched over in one of the cubicles, and he told the FA president then that, you know, that was it. Like, he just couldn't do the job anymore. And, you know, on hindsight, when you look at that incident, you know, it's not much of a surprise. But back then in 97, as a fan, it was a surprise to see him go.
Okay, just to inform you or to refresh your memories, he actually resigned at the end of a 7-match losing run. So, yeah, as you said, maybe emotions got the better of him.
Yeah.
But on Kenny Dalglish as well, he managed to steer Newcastle to finish second above Liverpool and Arsenal. So, not that bad in his first spell. I know what you mean after that, that, you know, things didn't go too well the season after. But, yeah, not too bad on that part. So, we're done now looking back at the past. Looking a bit closer to the present times, darker times, the Mike Ashley times. Abraham, please sum up the Mike Ashley times to our listeners. In not too many words, maybe you could say, give your best description of Mike Ashley's era at Newcastle.
My best description.
You're not using any profanities.
I think that's hard, lah, Ras.
Yeah, without Mike Ashley, we won't have 2 trophies, championship trophies.
Well, that's a positive.
That's a positive one. But because Mike Ashley was a very, what can I say in English? He was very picky of buying players or something or giving funds, something like that. We didn't expect. We didn't even expect him to give funds to the manager at the start of the season or in the middle of the season. So when Newcastle didn't buy any player in any transfer windows, we weren't surprised because Newcastle no players, okay, no problem. That's what we felt. So Ashley era, if I can describe in a small sentence, it was something that I instantly forget after PIF came. Okay, maybe something just maybe like that.
Okay. How long was it, Terence, that Mike actually was in charge of the club? And where did he come from, actually? What's his background?
Okay, I think he made his fortune in bargain retail. I think in retail. I wanted to say FMCG, but I don't think it's really FMCG. I think he made his fame and fortune buying brands at a very low price and then just maintaining operations at a very low cost while driving profits up. I was doing a math the other day when the takeover happened. I think he was around for 14 years, 07 up to 21, if I'm not wrong.
You're right.
Yeah.
07 to 21. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, correct. This is a bit of an unpopular opinion, but I actually liked him for putting Newcastle in the black. We were not in debt, and I think that made us a more interesting and valuable proposition for anyone to come in and purchase and run, you know. So I'll always be grateful for that. But like what Abraham said, I mean, it is painful as a fan to see the lack of ambition, the lack of effort, you know, to grow and to be better as a club and as an entity. And even right now, under new owners, when they are exploring sponsorship opportunities, and you read about these reports in the news, you find that our sponsorship deals are single digit deals really. Below 10 million, whereas you look at people like Man United, Arsenal, Manchester City, their sponsorship deals are, you know, anywhere from between 50 to 100 million. And so that shows how much we've lagged behind in the game. So it is a bit gut-wrenching to see the lack of ambition. But I mean, I am thankful also that he kept us in the black and never gave us any debt. So, yeah.
Hmm. Was he a Newcastle fan, Ashwin? Do you know?
No, not to our best knowledge. He wasn't. I mean, there were scenes of him when he first bought the club, or when he first purchased the club. You know, he used to sit together with the fans.
Yeah.
But I think when it all started going south for him, he distanced himself away from certain match days. You know, he used to come not as often, if I remember correctly, but he never used to sit in the stands with the fans any longer. But I mean, he's a London born and bred. He wasn't exactly a fan of Newcastle. I think the business itself was a good proposition for him.
He was always a businessman.
From the way I look at it, I agree with Taro. I echo Terence when he says, you know that you know he brought us to the black, and Terence is appreciative. I think a lot of fans are. When you look at the books and you see during Freddie Sheppard days, how much debt we had, and Mike Ashley days, we were somewhat debt-free. Correct me if I'm wrong, Terence. We had zero debt, were we?
I think it wasn't zero debt, right? I think so. Or maybe at the very least, he didn't leverage it on the club. And I think he pumped in his own money, and we owed money to him in that sense. So when he sold the club for, I think, 330 million or something like that, some amount of money went back to paying the debt that he owed. So
that he loaned out to the club.
Yes, correct. So we didn't owe a bank or financial
institution,
which was good.
We owned the owner. So it was a very different thing. Azrael is on. Okay, let me
yes, but, so...
But yeah, essentially, he wasn't a fan from our knowledge. And, you know, like what Abram said, I think one of the good things, besides Terence pointing out the good point that, you know, he brought us to the black, Abram said, you know, he won us two championship trophies. So, you know, take that for a win.
And yes, we've got our fourth Newcastle fan from Malaysia, Azrael, waiting for him to come on the screen now.
Yeah, hold on.
Hello, Azrael. Apa khabar?
I'm fine. Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Yeah, loud and clear, but we can't see you.
Yeah.
Hold on. I'm not trying to be mischievous or what. Just you know, being a senior of this podcast, I think I need to find where on the blue eye should I switch on my video. But let me check first.
Okay.
Yes. Why? Because
there you go. There you go. Azrael, how are you?
I forgot to. I'm fine. I forgot to on my video camera. Okay, right. I'm fine.
Which part of Malaysia are you in?
I'm in Shah Alam, in Selangor.
Shah Alam, okay. All right. And in Malaysia as well, I believe there'll be Newcastle fans in every state.
Yes, in fact, not only in Peninsula Malaysia, but also in Sabah, Borneo, Sarawak. Which is Sabah and Sarawak. In fact, one of our committee members is staying in Sabah right now.
Okay. And how many Newcastle fans are there in Malaysia?
We are in thousands. As for members of Tun Ami Malaysia, we are registered under ROS, under Home Ministry. We limited to 100 plus only, but I think you know lah, because Champions League is already here. So people asking when we're gonna reopen the registration of new members. So we are in way of opening up soon, real soon, hopefully.
Okay. And just briefly, how long have you been a Newcastle fan?
Since 1996-97 season.
Okay. All right. It's the same for the other three.
All of us are all the same.
I think that's around the time either you love the entertainers or you follow because Alan Shearer.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I did both actually. So, there's no shame in admitting to that, because previously I was following my dad's favorite club, which is the devil who wore loved to use the garfu, the fork, you know.
The Red Devils. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And what are your memories of those years, the entertainers, Kevin Keegan's entertainer years?
Well, basically, there are a lot of great memories. They are playing entertainment football, always moving forward. If I If you score one, I will score two. If you will score more than you, so something like that. We have our best defender is Darren Peacock, so you know, and then other people are always just attacking, like Philip Albert, that 5-0 chip still fresh in memory, like was yesterday.
Yeah.
And of course we have John Beresford on the left side, who's also attacking, you know, who can also play left midfield and also right back on Warren Button. So these are all legends of the entertainers. Of course, Alan Shearer is there. Peter Beardsley. I didn't follow during Andrew Cole, previously known as Andy Cole. He did score a lot of goals. He's from Bristol City, but I think we are just unlucky not to win the previous years, and then out of a sudden, Keegan just left us after the Spurs trumping. So that is mystery until now.
And also, it's a bit interesting because you say your father supports United. And you only supported Newcastle from 96-97. So that 95-96 season, were you a United fan as well?
I'm still. In fact, I left the other team when they won the league. So meaning that when they tipped Newcastle United. So I didn't left. They call it Lalang here in Malaysia, but I did not. I left a team where they're top in the league. So you can't say anything bad about me. But then during that season where that Levick thingy, and then also all the it's actually not only a pull factor of me going to Newcastle United as a fan, but also pushing factor, because there's one guy I really hate the most, the one who always loves to pull up the collar, because that was not the previous Man United that I know, because they're all very modest, they're all very very like a family thingy. But now when Eric Cantona came, he come with the suave of like I'm the guy, you know. So that's one reason, the pushing factor of it. And of course after went there in 1998, I fell in love with the culture, and finally in 2011 I managed to watch game live. It's also a joke in there, where because when I went there, it was last game of the season, 2010-2011 season, where we are leading 3-0 at home, but then end up drawing 3-3 with WBA. That touching who scored a hat-trick. So I see it all during that time. My there's one, a grandmother, they sit beside me, was so lovely when we won up 2-0, 3-0 up, and then become a beast or monster when we drew 3-3. So that's how passionate they are really. So basically they make me fall in love even further. So
okay, and very briefly on the Mike Ashley era, what are your memories?
Wow, a lot of bad memories actually. Putting John Carver as the manager, and also giving that Steve McLaren. I don't know what happened on that, and of course the Steve Bruce thingy, but. The only thing, if I want to take it positive from what had happened in my actually area, is he did make our account look clean, meaning that we did not have any like 500 million loan or 1 billion loan to buy the club, like what the red people are doing right now. So if you ask me, that's the only good thing about my Ashley, which in the end helped with the account, helped PIF and also Ruben's brothers and also Amanda's family to buy the club. So overall, it was 14 years, right? 13 or 14 years? 14 years of Near hell, but there is always a silver lining in every heartache. Yeah. So
everything comes to an end one day.
Yeah.
So going to the takeover now. Okay. Obviously, when the news came, the broke through that you know you've been taken over by a new company, by the Arabs, the Saudi Arabians. So there's always this thing nowadays that a lot of people say, okay, the Middle East owners, they're sports washing. It's, I don't know, it's always painted as something illegal or something criminal that they're doing. But what's your opinion on this Arab ownership from Saudi? What do you think about it? Is it okay? Is it fine? Is it not fine? What's your take on it? Every one of you can have a go at this.
I think everybody, exactly like what you put it, you know, people think, you know, they've got tons of money. It's sports washing and whatnot. But even the Chinese owners were doing this, a similar thing.
Yeah,
when they started buying a lot of the other championship clubs, premiership clubs, right? I don't think it's that. I think it's, you know, at the end of the day, let's look at PR, how they purchased the club. Did they go all out and just say, I'm going to revamp the entire squad? No.
Yeah.
They brought in Eddie Howe, okay, who I think he's a brilliant manager. And like I was discussing this with Terrence when, you know, Steve Bruce got the sack. We were just talking about it with Terrence and some of the guys. And I said, you know, I think Eddie Howe is a better choice than Emery. And they all looked at me like, are you mad? I'm like, no, I'm serious. I think Eddie Howe is a better choice than Emery. Yeah. And, he came in, let's go back to the owners again. The first thing that they did was they decided to invest in the club, right? In the facilities of the club. The training ground has been revamped, you know, from the time of Mike Ashley when they were having, the term escapes me now, but what is it? You know, they do the ice showers, right? The ice showers. It was in this black color bin. And it wasn't one of those professional bins. It was one of those bins that when after we play soccer, you know, last time in St. Wilfred, we'll use those black bins. No, it's one of those, you know, but they revamped everything. They invested. The training ground is now state of the art, right? So that was the first thing that they did. Second thing they did was they didn't just go out like when we wanted to buy Botman in the January transfer window in a 21-22 season, right? Who was the club that we bought from? Lille, is it?
Lille, yeah.
Lille, right? And Lille marked up the price. And they said, no, I'm not going to pay for it. Right? They didn't just say, okay, you know what? I got money. I'm going to throw. No, they didn't do that. They decided to look at the other options. Eddie Howe came in. He wanted to buy Ake. Nathan Ake, right? And
yeah.
City said, no, we're not going to sell him. Botman was out of reach price-wise at that point. They went for Denburn. So it was never a thing about them coming in and just throwing money, right? They built it progressively. And you can see that even in this season's squad, right? We have Jacob Murphy, who wasn't doing well. Joe Linton, he's been on tremendous form. He's been called up the Brazilian squad. So Joe Linton was terrible during the Steve Bruce era. He was bought for 40 million quid. He wasn't performing up to par. And Eddie Howe came in, changed his position, and you look at how he's playing his game today. So it's a whole lot different when you talk about, you know, Roman coming in, throwing the money in Chelsea, right? You look within a span of one season, you look at how many players they acquired, right? And then Mourinho came in the following season after they sacked Ranieri. City. When City came in, when the Qataris came in to buy City. The Emiratis came in to buy City, right? You look at the first season, how much they spent. They revamped the entire squad. Whereas when the Saudis came in for Newcastle, it wasn't a total squad revamp, right? We took players on loan. We only bought Kieran Trippier. We bought Bruno, Dan Burn, and Chris Wood. That was who we bought in January transfer window. So it wasn't a thing about them coming in and just throwing. That's my take.
The rest of you agree? Terrence, Abraham, and Azrael?
I totally agree. Agree.
Terrence, Azrael.
You know what? I think Saudi Arabia has, I wouldn't say it's issues, but I think they deal with things a certain way, some controversial, some more controversial than others. But I don't think, as in, I don't buy the sports washing term, because to me, you know, they things can be mutually exclusive. They don't need to be lumped together. And it's not as if now that Saudi Arabia or the PIF owns Newcastle United, you see a lot of pro Saudi marketing or publicity within Newcastle or around Newcastle United itself. You don't see that much. So to me, it's not really sports washing. And I think for people who express a bit of disgust or express a bit of dislike for this situation, you know, they need to look at their own passions and hobbies and what have you, and make sure that they're not supporting the same thing as well, because PIF has its arms in a lot of things. PIF has its arms in Disney, in Electronic
Facebook,
Arts, for those
Facebook,
who play video games.
Meta, yeah, exactly. Facebook,
yes,
right.
Correct. So
McLaren.
Yeah, correct. So it's like, you know, where exactly do you draw the line with regards to sports washing? But really, it's not as if they're using Newcastle as a tool to shout out about how great Saudi Arabia is and stuff like that. You know, they're not. And even if this is a soft power, like, to me, it doesn't matter. It doesn't. As long as you're not out there shouting out propaganda, you're running it as an investment vehicle to make money, I'm all good.
Yeah, if you ask me, right. Basically, all this media, not even media, the
Western
fan
media.
Yeah, Western media and the fan of the other club.
Mm.
They pick and choose. You can see later on when Man U have been bought by Disney, Sheikh Jassim thing, they will sweep under the floor about this thing. So, even Liverpool, actually, before PIF came here, they wanted to buy Liverpool, but then they didn't agree or something or like that, but they end up buying Newcastle United. So it's for me, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn lah, but that's the right word to say, right? But again, like I told you just now, why not blame McLaren's by not stop using Facebook or if you want to say this Arab or sport washing, whatever washing you want to call. If you ask me, they are pick and choose, and then Western media, especially United Kingdom, love this type of propaganda and then belittle other country. Well, they know that even Arab is one of their biggest
competitors.
Saudi Arabia is one of the biggest investor in United Kingdom, you know, in the board, the airplane there. So he's just finding a thing to blame them, or you know, these all medias are said they are. I think, you know, Western media always love to jack about themselves and then belittle about other people, especially, you know, Saudi Arabia currently is moving toward modernization, where they open up their country.
Their doors.
So, you know, so they are even WWE are going there for WrestleMania, whatever it is. So I think, in a way, Western media are trying to protect their own
interest.
That's the main reason, because it's basically pick and choose, and then you're quiet about this matter, but you hunt on about other matters. So I don't care, because now we are the richest club in the world. Eat that, my friend.
Azrael, just putting it bluntly, lah. He's just putting it very bluntly. Hantam, babe.
I love it.
Because if PIF bought the club, they'll be very happy also.
Yeah, correct. That's my point as well. I mean, any club, if you bought by Arabs, the fans of the club will be very happy as well. Because, you know, it's a fact. I feel across foreign owners, I feel the Arab owners are the best owners of a club, because they do it in a very stable manner. They don't, you know, come in and then go all guns blazing like a cowboy.
No. Just call it do it the Bolly way lah. Bolly. They are not doing the bowling, which I agree with Ash just now, because the way that Newcastle are doing it, we are not splashing the money. We're not buying any Robinho for 35, 47 million or whatever.
Exactly.
It is.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or Babatov from somewhere else. So even I think the last few days, there was an article saying that the highest net spending in the last decade is Manchester United at 1.1 billion. So if you want to attack that, because that is net spending 1.1 billion, okay, they can say that they are making money. This is actually one of the way. I think I like to attack this on also the FFP and also areas that it's similar to Westerners' ways lah, because when people are on the up, they will try to potong them, they will try to cut them off. To also, I think you know all this greenery thing, where the Westerners don't have any more timber or all this hutan thing. They won't let jungle us cut thing, our own tree, because we're not cutting for fun. We are cutting for our own development. But when they go to their own country, they can feel a jungle there, right? So it's part of the way that same also the FFP, the high people are very afraid of they might not be qualified, so-called on merit. So they say that, oh, you cannot purchase, buy players or whatever under FFP. So I think this is all BS for me. It's totally BS. They are just trying to find ways to stop a new club on the up and then put a lot of terms and conditions. So similar to FFP and also similar to this so-called Arab spot washing thing. So I don't care. Okay. Sorry.
All right. Moving on to the football side of things. What do you make of Newcastle season?
Last season.
The one that just passed.
To tell you the truth, if in the early season, last August, they said we're going to be in the final of Carabao Cup and top four, I'll be cutting the head off other people saying that, because you're joking, right? We only got 11 last season, and then we don't splash in. We're not buying Mbappe, or we're not buying all these star players, so-called, which basically grant us to dream that big. Because to tell you the truth, my target was to be in the top eight. Top eight was my challenge one, because I always want to try to be in top 10. Try to improve on what you did last season. We did 11, so I think 10 is also good, but then we hope to do 8 and then just sneak through into 7 or something like that. That was my biggest hope and dream, to get to the final of Carabao Cup and then to see that old man crying when he was interviewed. Couldn't be bothered. I think that hits me hard, very hard. Inside that,
he said, "We are here."
Here. It's exactly. A long way going up. It's a long way. So, couldn't be bothered if we lose, win or lose. So basically, that sum is all. I mean, we are on the up, and then, of course, I try to maintain not only me, all the Tunami Malaysia expectation. They say, "Hey guys, we are already in Europe, man. We already." So I always do a target of top 10, we X that. Top 8, we X that. Conference League, we X that. And after that is Europa League, the last 2 weeks, we X that also.
Yeah.
So the Champions League is a bit, but I always say, okay, relax, we're already here. We have gone beyond our expectation. So if we have the top 4, then it's okay. Of course, if we lost a Carabao Cup and also lost last week, to the top 4, to Liverpool or whoever it is, the number 5 or below, it will be devastating. But at the end, and overall picture, we are in the right path. And then to get number 4, I mean, and at least 100 million pound of money available, so that's great. And then of course, now we have a better crop of players. Willing to come here because we're playing UCL.
Okay.
That's my take.
All right. And I believe the rest of you would agree with that.
Yeah, 101%. Yeah. I think I absolutely echo Azrael when he says, you know, that we surpassed our own expectation this season, or the season that just passed. Like, for me personally, I thought that we would finish somewhere between top six. And of course, just before the World Cup started, the entire how we were just going all out, getting 5-1 wins, right? Even before before the Spurs stretching, that was a fluke on its own, the 6-1. But you know, before the World Cup, you know how we were playing, I think by then we had already we were at second at one point, weren't we? We were at second, right, before World Cup. So even I was stumped. I was amazed by how well we were doing. And but I had a feeling that once World Cup starts, our rhythm will be a bit juggled, right? And but I told myself, whatever it is, if we were to finish top six, it's still a massive achievement. Massive achievement. And I absolutely echo Azriel when he says, you know, that, yeah, you know, we actually ticked all the boxes last season. And I think the bittersweet moment was the Spurs game where we won 6-1 simply because we have never scored 5 goals within 22 minutes. Never. Never scored 5 goals within 22 minutes. And the quality that the players showed on the pitch is what every Newcastle fan wants. You fight for the shirt. You fight to play. You fight for the shirt. You fight for the club. And that's what we saw. We put aside Spurs, their form at that minute, but the way the lads played, that was really, really something. And I think it echoes the entire how we played throughout the season. Yeah, that's my take.
All right. Abraham, now looking forward to next season, what are you looking forward to? Like, in terms of, now is a crazy season, a transfer market season. Where do you think Newcastle needs to strengthen?
Except goalkeeper, I think, yeah. Because the defender, all of the four starting defenders are great players, but all, of course they need backup, like left defender. Actually, in the on the bench we have Matt Target, but Matt Target, if we saw the last game versus Chelsea, he was like exhausted or out of position so many times. So maybe we need backup, and backup for Kieran Trippier as well, because okay, we have Harvey Mankio is okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Emil Kraft is good too, but maybe we need some quality defenders, some quality right backs, and for midfielder we need number 6, of course, because maybe all of us want to see Bruno focus on playmaking, not for defending. So we need number 6 to just to cover any the first the 1/3 of the pitch, then left winger or right winger maybe. So maybe basically almost all positions we need this makeup. So yeah, I think the positions did you mean a position of the players, right?
Yeah, I mean that. Correct. Yeah.
Except goalkeepers, because we have Nick Pope and we still have Martin Dubravka as well. Martin, if I can remember, Martin Dubravka said that he didn't want to leave Newcastle this year, so he would want to fight for the first place. Maybe because we have Champions League too, so he might be playing in Champions League, or he might be playing in the league, or rotation. So yeah, almost all position, but the very big hole maybe number 6 position.
Okay.
The defending midfielder, I think.
All right. Terence, it's very early days yet, but what would you think Newcastle would be at the end of next season? You know, where would you, what's your expectations actually? That's what I would like to ask you.
Well, the sky's the limit, man. I mean, like what everyone said earlier, right? I think Azriel put it best. No one expected Newcastle, or none of us expected our club to be in the Champions League, and playing in the final of a cup competition. I think that was something that wasn't expected, because none of us thought that we would fly will fly so far, so fast. But this season now, I think I'm going to be a little bit more realistic. I do feel that the results of this season was partly due to Liverpool, Chelsea and Spurs having a bit of a stinker this season.
Mm.
I do expect them to come back stronger next season. So to me, I think anywhere in the European places would be great. Anywhere in the European places would still be a success for me. Hopefully in the Champions League, but if not, the Europa League is not that bad as well. And hopefully we can go one step further and win the cup in the next season.
Mm. I'd like to add on Terence, if I may.
Yeah.
Ben. Remember, yeah. I'm thinking that next season we might be in the top five, yeah. But still qualified. Still qualified to the UCL because the champions are from Europe, from AEPL. I think you know, right? Now next season there's an additional five, and then they're gonna again. This is what we go back to the elite club who wanted to ensure that they are in that UCL.
Correct.
So if you ask me, as long as the EPL champion EPL club won the UCL, I'm okay with number five.
Mm. All right. Okay. So thanks a lot, guys, for an extensive sharing session. Going back.
Thanks for having us, Ra. Thanks for having us. Yeah,
welcome. My pleasure. And you know, going down memory lanes as we always do, and then talking about present times. Good times for Newcastle United fans. Wish you all the best for the upcoming season. Enjoy the crazy season of the transfer market.
Will, I think it's opening tomorrow, right? Tomorrow opening the officially, although we are already young Buka, we already bought youngsters who immediately loaned to Freenot, which is a Holland champion. So that's good. Like that. So that's good. Yeah. So other than that, I think I have to agree with Abraham. So we need to buy a left back number six. Mm. And also if Fran Toran is coming, then that's all I can say.
Exciting times ahead, lah. That's all we can clap to.
We can dream because we have been suffering for the past 20 years. So.
Yeah, you're right. You've had the dark times, and now is the good times for you. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Thank you very much, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry for the delay again.
It's okay. It's okay. You more than made up for it.
Yep.
In your short cameo.
That's why Azrael, I was telling the guys just now that as Newcastle fans, we have one commonality amongst us. All of us are immune to heart attacks. So don't worry, bro. Okay, the entire how it has been over the years for us, we are all immune to heart attacks.
Yeah.
Agree 110%. Especially the last 10 minutes. And you know what? I don't know why, but I have to add this one. Eddie Howe is a brilliant manager. He wants to show that how wrong we are by putting Matt Target, just put Dan Burn at the stand for the last last game, and see that you see how Matt Target is doing.
Yeah.
That's the reason why I put Dan Burn there. Burn. So basically, just showing to other people that you don't know, I know best. So that's why I always put there hashtag in how I trust. So basically, don't care about other people. Of course, although Eddie Howe is currently the manager, if all of a sudden something happened, the only person I wanted to replace him is the Sir Bobby Robson, prodigal son. That's all. Other than that, I don't care.
Mr. Jose.
Yes. That's the only one. That's the only one.
That's interesting.
I don't care. But now I'm happy. I hope this one, Eddie Howe, will become our manager legend and won us at least a cup, if not more, and then keep us in the UCL for the next 5 to 10 years. And he end up become our director of football for the years to come.
He's already charted his plan for him.
His career path.
Because when Emery came, and then he don't want to come, and then people are a bit Eddie Howe, including me. But then the thing that I always do is that I always support whoever the owners
decide to
hire. Okay. Hmm. Even to one extent, I support Steve Bruce. You got to understand me. You can ask all my tune. I mean, I'm the only one who support the manager during that time because I know it's not 100% his fault, although he's limited, but it's my actually fault at the first place of putting him there.
Hiring him. Yeah.
Yes, yes. I have some pity on him, or maybe during my time when I was supporting he was the captain or something like that. Maybe, but yeah. then I cannot blame him 100%. Of course, he's limited. Of course, now what Eddie Howe shown to the world that is the best. And then everything's come to a reason why Emery and then suddenly end up come to Villa. So I say no issue. So I'm happy with Eddie Howe, and I'm praying and hoping for every success all the way to him and the club, because he has done brilliantly. I mean, yeah, all other fans can just shut up and then do your own thing. Forget.
Okay. All right. On that note, it's me, Ras, signing off. Thanks a lot, Newcastle fans from Singapore, Indonesia.
Thanks for having us, Ras.
Thank you, Ras. Thank you, Ras. Take care. Take care, everybody.
Good night, guys. Cheers.
Bye-bye.